This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez joins us to discuss the fallout from Perrigo shareholders rejecting a hostile takeover bid from Mylan. But first,
the voters spoke earlier this month. They elected their leaders in both Kalamazoo and Portage. That includes two-year terms to the mayors of both cities, Bobby Hopewell in Kalamazoo and Peter Strastis in Portage. They're both joining us to take a look ahead at the issues and challenges they face. Bobby Hopewell and Peter Strastis, thank you for being here.
Hello.
Thank you for inviting us.
Let's begin. I'll let both of you kind of answer this one, and I'll start with you, Bobby Hopewell. What do you think is the most important issue that you are going to tackle as mayor of Kalamazoo in the next 2 years?
Well, it's been the struggle of the financial situation we face. Certainly, we have a structural challenge, a deficit in regards to our city, but moreover, we have a challenge within our state regarding how cities are funded, and property tax just is not capable of handling the needs and expectations of the citizens of our communities, and we have to figure out a different path. We have a revenue panel that's looking at this and is going to be presenting a number of options and opportunities for us, and then we'll be passing those on to the citizens to look at what route or journey we need to take next.
Peter Strastis in Portage, as the mayor there for the next 2 years, what do you think is the most important thing that you're going to tackle?
Well, the next couple of years, I believe Portage needs to get back on track of growing. Every community needs to grow and grow in a logical, progressive manner. And Portage grew for a while, for many, many years. The recession pretty much stopped the growth. And we know in any community that we have to provide services. And with those services, we need to, of course, invite businesses to contribute towards our community needs. So in the next 2 years, we in Portage need to get back on track of growth, attracting businesses and jobs for not just Portage, but for all of southwestern Michigan. So if they live in Kalamazoo or Texas Township, they're going to shop in Portage. They're going to live in Portage. They might be working elsewhere in the community. So we need to grow.
Bobby Hopo, you mentioned this revenue panel that the city has convened to look at some different ideas, perhaps for bringing in money to the city coffers. Is that going to really set the direction of what the city does going forward? Does this sort of set the table for any other problems that you're going to address?
Well, I think it's key to helping us deliver on the opportunities that I truly believe our city has. The mayor talks about growth. Well, we need to be able to attract businesses to our communities. We need to be able to attract families. We're blessed with the Kalamazoo Promise that certainly has helped stabilize our school system more and has them headed in a better path. But yeah, I think that as we've been working, and I've been on the commission for 12 years, and in that time we've cut about $25 million out of a budget. But I also run a business and have run a number of businesses, and you can't just cut your way to prosperity. You've got to figure out your cuts and figure out your revenue. You look at both sides of the ledger, and we have to create a new day on both sides.
You have a different problem in Portage. You had a budget surplus, and some people would say, wow, what a nice problem to have. But there is some decision-making here, right, and some prioritizing, Peter Strastis, about what you're going to do with that money in terms of the problems you are going to address.
Yeah, Gordon, just to be clear, that we held back on many positions during the recession. We didn't know what was going to happen with the business tax, the personal property tax that businesses were paying, and the state of Michigan said that they will no longer pay. And there was promises to all the communities that we will be left whole. And we didn't know if that would happen. And so over the last several years, we were holding back on expenses, not filling positions. And as the story unraveled, that we were left whole, that we did get, by and large, the personal property taxes that we were promised. So that was more of this cash windfall, good problem that we've had. And the city council's made decisions as of the last meeting that we want to split the good fortune in half and put half towards our debt reduction, just like a mortgage on a house. We're going to buy that down. We're in the $140 million range several years ago. We're into the $77 million range, and we believe next year we'll be below $70 million in our debt as far as our capital improvement plans. And the other half will go to local roads. Of course, the governor just signed a bill for a significant amount of money for roads. But we as local officials know that there'll be little to no of those dollars going into the road at the bottom of your driveway of your house. So local roads will get little to no of those funds. Yeah, major thoroughfares and communities will get it. The highways will get it. The county roads will get it. But as I look at Bobby, you know, we're not going to see much of those dollars. No. And so we're going to put as much dollars as we can into our local residential roadway systems with the other half of this dollars that we have available.
Bobby Hopewell, I want to go back for a moment to the revenue panel that we talked about earlier, which is looking for some new ways to bring in money to the city. And this might sort of take us now into a new discussion about areas where people may work together. But the revenue panel has identified some options such as a countywide consolidated emergency dispatch authority, increasing the countywide law enforcement millage, regionalizing water and sewer utilities. These things, just at first blush, look like they would require dealing with some other governments if they're going to become reality. So do you see that as the path going forward, more efforts to collaborate, work with the other local governments?
I've been an advocate for that for a long time. You know, my original career was as a paramedic, is as a paramedic, and we know that whether it's a car accident or a criminal breaking into a building or a fire, I'm not sure most citizens even care what uniform shows up to handle that emergency. And we have to be better at, from a governmental standpoint, understanding that and working for efficiencies and effectiveness, but delivering service in a way that helps our entire community. Some of these structures that we have in place affects communities negatively. As a whole. And I think that there's lots of opportunities, whether it's having the same fire marshal's division. A fire investigation is a fire investigation is a fire investigation. Detective bureaus, I've said it over and over. We're going sometimes after the same people. Having one detective bureau makes sense to me. Will it save? Will it be more efficient? And that's the other piece. Remember, there's two pieces of the coin here. I don't mean coin necessarily, but sometimes we rest in, it's got to save money, got to save money, got to save money, got to be less cost, got to be less cost. When sometimes I think, and often I think, yeah, that's important, but also how do we be more efficient? How do we be more effective? How do we provide better service? And if that's the case, that's the value. The cost may be worth the value to provide better or more efficient or more effective. I'm not advocating one or over the other, but I think we have to balance our thinking around the cost and effectiveness as it relates to value. That, and so I think there's lots of opportunities to change. And there's some understand that there's some pieces that may not be more efficient and effective. Those pieces you see, maybe law enforcement, countywide law enforcement may not be more effective, or you may not have as much savings, maybe, I don't know. But some of the back-end structures, how many chiefs do you need? How many lieutenants do you need? How many folks in the records department? We all have records departments. We all have commanders. Do we need all of those folks? I don't know.
Peter Stratsis, would you agree that there are other opportunities that the cities of Kalamazoo and Portage, plus the other communities in Kalamazoo County and maybe even beyond, can take a look at?
Absolutely. We are in the new norm. The new norm is something that we have never experienced before. And those that are outside of local government finances don't fully understand some of the financial pressures we're going through in this new norm. And we all know, of course, that we have siloed budgets between taxing jurisdictions. And even within our respective communities, we've got a library, we've got a school, we've got city government. And within our own piece of real estate and our municipalities, those three need to figure out how to collaborate because we serve the same citizens. And then you broaden that out a little bit, and of course we have county government taxation, and we have respective cities taxation. And we got state and federal, and it goes on, that in this new norm we live in right now, we must think differently. that everyone needs to put on their different set of glasses and think differently. The new norm is forcing us to do things differently. And I go back 10 years ago, New Mayor Kalamazoo, New Mayor Portage, and mutual aid was the first thing we did together. And like Bobby said, the average citizen doesn't care what's the name on the side of that red truck. As long as the red truck shows up when there's a fire in a house, they are blind to the name, but they want to see the red truck show up as soon as possible. And the fact of the matter is, that happened one day after the mutual aid agreement we had between Kalamazoo and Portage. I forget, it's been 10 years, Bobby. I forget which truck showed up, but a citizen's house was on fire, and it was the other community that showed up first. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the average citizen will never disagree with that. But we also know that we have to act locally and think regionally. And so we can't move money across township lines, city lines, but we can work together. We have worked together. And obviously, we worked together for many years for two monumental things, and that, of course, is Central Dispatch, as well as countywide transit. These things have been talked about till nauseam, and these things have had significant discussions over the last several years. And it just so happens that the earth is shaking right now with both of those, where things are actually coming to closure to a certain degree. And so, yes, those things can happen. And perhaps the recession kind of kicked us in the butt to actually get people in rooms to have the tough discussions. But at the end of the day, good minds did come together. And good minds have come up with agreements. And I believe as these agreements are being memorialized that we have better services. Some, I believe, are at lower costs, and some, as the mayor said, they have to offer value, okay? And there might not be cost savings, but it's more efficient in the long run. And we need to continue to put our glasses on to look at things differently. This new norm is not going to change. We're not going to go back to the old models.
Is it possible that you can over-consolidate, that if you bring everything together, you can get something which becomes perhaps a little big and tougher to manage than it is when you do have several different governments managing their own operation, whatever that may be?
Well, it's about the governance structure. And perhaps many, many years ago, before Bobby myself, the governance structure could not be created. And I think the governance structure for Central Dispatch is a good structure where everyone has a fair say in the discussion and there's equity in decisions. The same thing with countywide transit. There's opportunities for the governance model to make sure that no one entity is the king. We're all in this together. So it's really about the governance model, Gordon. I think that is key. And of course, it's the attitude of the people and how we communicate, and that big T word, we have to trust each other. And without trust, communication, even a good governance model won't work, but I think the stars in alignment with all the above right now, and great things are happening right now with two major things in the county, again, transit and Central Dispatch. We're not quite there yet with Central Dispatch, but hopefully new director will be hired very soon, if not already. And so a lot of this is moving along, I think, because of the trust and communication. You having us here, I think, is helpful, too.
Well, and so people may look back at that long history with Central Dispatch and how long it took to finally come to reality, and to a certain extent as well with transit. But I'm wondering, is it possible that Central Dispatch and County Transit might have paved the way a little bit and shown how that sort of work is possible, and maybe makes it a little easier than for the next topic that you're dealing with, Bobby?
Well, I think that every success we have, you know, success breeds success. And so whether it was KVET, the Kalamazoo Valley Enforcement Team, or whether it's working more closely with our law enforcement criminal labs work, or our canine units that support each other, and even mutual aid. You know, we have initial aid and there's mutual aid. And mutual is you come and help when called. Initial is you go and help the other municipality when the call comes out immediately. All of these things help to build that T word, as the mayor said, trust. And I think that transit and dispatch, as they continue to move forward, are setting another stage and a larger way for us all to gather on to move to what's next. And that thinking of next has to be in our vocabulary because of all the opportunities and challenges we face.
Before we end, I want to ask you both a question related to local elections. In Battle Creek, they had a kind of a drop in turnout over the last couple of years, and it wasn't that high before. So the Battle Creek Inquirer had an editorial saying, if you want more voters for local elections, don't hold them in odd-numbered years. Of course, they do in Battle Creek, just like they do in Kalamazoo and in Portage. As two gentlemen who just ran and won elections, okay, Peter Strazzese didn't have anybody else on the ballot for mayor of Portage, but still, you know, there is a process you go through. What are your thoughts about that? Would it be, would it bring more people perhaps into the voting booth if you were holding these elections next year when people are also voting for president and other things which are on the ballot at the same time?
I don't think that's the right strategy. I think that people need to be engaged in their community, and when they're engaged, they come out and vote. It's probably a little bit of a gimmick that they're going to vote more. More people come out and vote when the presidential election, and they're probably coming for that, and they might not even understand who's running locally. So I think it's incumbent upon the leadership of the community to get the citizens engaged. And the more they're engaged, the more they want to come out and vote, and that's a healthy community. On the flip side, we know when there's a hot issue on the ballot, lots of people come out. And quite honestly, in the last election, which was one of the best attended in recent memory in Portage, it wasn't who was running for mayor, it wasn't who was running for council, it was about a school millage. It may be a marijuana ballot issue too, but certainly a $144 million issue for Portage Public Schools was huge for community, and that drove a lot of people come out to vote. So it's about engagement, and it's about the issue of the day for them to want to weigh in with their opinion.
Bobby Hopo, what do you think in Kalamazoo?
Yeah, I'm not sure about having an election next year or what have you. You know, down ballot items tend to play second fiddle the more you have on the ballot. So
might you kind of get lost in the shuffle?
Right.
In other words, that everyone's paying attention to stuff further up the ballot and city commission and city council don't get the attention that they should.
Yeah, I would submit to you that having these elections the way we have them now in off years or odd years gives the individuals the opportunity to focus on their city, on the dynamics of how do you move this place. I think we have to work on connecting individuals to the work of their city. And at the end of the day, those that are most interested come out and vote. So again, how do you enhance that interest? And I think also there's a little, I'll call it complacency for the lack of a better word, in regards to we have these individuals, we're going to elect them to do this work. So we have this representative democracy, and I expect that they're going to do well. I have a belief and faith that they will take care of our community. And so maybe I don't need to go out, or maybe I do need to go. I don't know. I'm no expert on elections. But I think the opportunity truly is for all of us to work to better connect the issues and the opportunities and the challenges of your city with every person. Gordon, you live in the city, so somehow I bet you vote. And you are probably more connected because of your work, but my gut tells me that's been something that's been inbred in you for years. I think that we can grow that and work with individuals to better connect with their local government.
Kalamazoo Mayor Bobby Hopewell and Portage Mayor Peter Strazzese, thank you both for your time.
Thank
you. Pleasure.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Perrigo shareholders have rejected a hostile takeover bid from fellow pharmaceutical company Mylan. Friday's deadline passed with less than 50% of Perrigo shareholders agreeing to sell their stock. Mark Sanchez is a senior writer for MIBiz. He's been covering the various stories of mergers, acquisitions, and takeovers involving Perrigo for the last several months. Mark Sanchez, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So Perrigo officials were very public in saying that this was not a good offer for their stockholders. At the end of the day, is there some belief at Perrigo that by coming out and pushing that idea, that they were able to convince enough people that, yeah, this is not the time to sell?
Yeah, they not only convinced enough people, they convinced a lot of their shareholders. I believe the final numbers, it was about 39% of the shares that were tendered to Mylan. They, of course, now go back to the shareholders with this offer lapsing. But Joe Papa, the chairman and CEO, and we met with him Friday afternoon in Allegan, he was just exhilarant and jubilant over the outcome. And a lot of folks are surprised that it was this large of a difference. A lot of folks expected many more shareholders to tender their shares and to be a lot closer. But it was about 61% stayed with the company and 39% tendered to Mylan. And that tells you a lot, that there are some shareholders who believe in what Perrigo is doing. It's growing through acquisition. It's growing through new product development. And Joe Papa really made that point, and he called it kind of an overwhelming endorsement of Perrigo's current strategy. He also made the point that 80% of Perrigo's long-term shareholders, these are the folks who have owned Perrigo shares for multiple years, they're not the hedge funds, they're not the short investors. These are folks who have been there a while, and 80% of those stuck with the company. So it's a pretty good victory for Perrigo.
Joe Papa also was very insistent that shareholders made this decision, even though Perrigo certainly made their case that it was a not a good offer, that he thought it was important that the shareholders decide this. What else could Perrigo have done to try and short-circuit this offer if they'd wanted to?
Well, there's a number of things. In fact, talking to him one-on-one Friday afternoon, they said that there were things they did consider. They could have gone out and pursued a white knight. This is somebody else who could have bought the company for a larger value. They didn't want to try any type of poison pill. They could have gone and tried the merger of equals. They could have gone out and made an acquisition on its own, raised the valuation of the company, and make it too expensive to buy. Ultimately, there were some provisions in what's known as the Irish Takeover Panel, in the Irish Takeover Rules, because Perrigo is domiciled in Dublin now, that really limited Perrigo's defense. There wasn't a lot Perrigo could do, and Mylan was allowed to take this straight to the shareholders. Ultimately, the decision was, let's rely on the shareholders. Let's make our case. Let's explain our strategy. Let's explain what we're doing, what we believe, and ultimately let the Perrigo shareholders decide this issue. And then Joe Papa said it straight out. I'm comfortable letting these shareholders, the owners of the company, after all, we forget that. You know, we call them shareholders, but these are the owners, not the board, not the executives. The shareholders own the company, and he said we're comfortable letting the shareholders decide this.
But Perrigo is still domiciled in Ireland. Are they more susceptible going forward to somebody else's effort to acquire them because of the fact that they have domiciled over there for tax purposes?
Yeah, they domiciled, did a corporate tax inversion 2 years ago, about $150 million estimated in tax savings. You bet, they're still susceptible to somebody who wants to try this, whether Mylan within a year, in another year, it has to wait a year, could try again, or another company could try this. So it's different. The Irish takeover law is different from what we have here in America and what the states have here in America. So it could happen again. But again, the fact that Perrigo did win this by a pretty good sized margin is an indication that the shareholders agree with the strategy. And anybody trying this again would, of course, have to find a way to overcome that confidence in the company.
Could there, though, be a better offer on the table down the road? Joe Papa also made the point several times that if there had been a solid offer that they thought was good for the shareholders, Perrigo would not have stood in the way. They would not have made the recommendation that they did to reject. So is it possible that just somewhere down the road someone's going to make an offer which, as they say, is just too good to refuse?
Yeah, that's a great point. Let's remember that. Joe Papa, Judy Brown, the CFO, the board, never said, we don't want to sell. They said, we don't want to sell for this amount. They always maintained Mylan significantly, seriously undervalued the corporation, and that's why they considered it a bad deal. Toward once this really got into a hostile takeover bid, beginning in September, they started targeting the Mylan corporate governance and other behavior and practices within Mylan. But that's a point to remember here is, you know, Perrigo is a large multinational, multi-billion dollar corporation now. As I tell people, it's not this little pill company in Allegan anymore. It's a major corporation. It's a global player in its industry. It's just really beginning to gain traction in Europe with its strategy. It's an attractive offer. It's an already attractive takeover prospect. And if somebody comes forward with the right money and the right deal on the table, just for a simple fiduciary responsibility, the management and board has to consider it. But if it's the right offer that makes financial sense and makes strategic sense, sure, you could very well see an offer sometime in the future for this company that the directors and the shareholders ultimately decide it is the right deal.
Many business leaders and economic development types were sort of rallying around Perrigo leading up to this vote and hoping that the takeover attempt would fall short. Now that it did, what is the, sort of the reaction from those people? Are they relieved? But I guess I'm also wondering at the same time, are they thinking about what we just talked about, that this could come up again?
Yes and yes. I spoke with Nora Belgoing Williams down in Allegan County Economic Development Commission this morning, and she said pretty much that thing when I asked her about it. Said yes, we're very relieved because there's a lot of anxiety of what this could mean, and it's not like Mylan would have just started closing things down in Allegan. The issue was you now have outside ownership, you have a business being run elsewhere that's not going to take local considerations into business decisions anymore. It's not really going to look at the hometown ties and look at the hometown loyalties and making business decisions. And look, every business has to make hard business decisions. But when you have that disconnect, more often than not, those business decisions are not going to go in your favor. But on the other issue, Nora made a good point, is as economic developers, her and her colleagues out there need to keep this in mind. This company won this fight. But now we have to make sure we have not only the right business environment to maintain a good climate for this company, but what if one of these companies, there, and we have a number of multinationals here in West and Southwest Michigan, once they suddenly have an ownership change and they're no longer run from this region, we need to make sure those new owners like the business climate here and make decisions in our favor. Number two, is our economy diversified enough? So if something like this does happen and we do get these type of cuts, are we diversified enough and have that diversity in our economic base to withstand that? Remember what happened in Kalamazoo a decade ago when Pfizer made some business decisions. That was a tough time, but they had a business plan, and it's worked out awfully well. Same type of thinking is in play here, which is the economic developers need to make sure they continue on that focus of economic diversity and maintaining the right business climate.
We have about a minute left. Mark, is there any indication now that this is over that we might see some more activity from Perrigo, that perhaps this allows them to pursue some other ventures which they haven't been able to over these last several months?
Yeah, and Joe Papa made exactly that point on Friday afternoon. Yes, Perrigo remains in an acquisition mode. It wants to buy, do what it calls bolt-on acquisitions, and do adjacent geographic and product categories. It's looking to buy, it's scouting for deals, and I would imagine in the not-too-distant future, we'll start seeing Perrigo once again announcing some acquisitions to further its business interests.
Mark Sanchez, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Mark Sanchez is senior writer for MIBiz. You can find links to their stories on the attempted takeover of Perrigo by Mylan. That was rejected by shareholders on Friday. You can find links to the MIBiz stories on the attempted takeover at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.